Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
My next guest has been talking with me on the air for decades. Shoot, I remember when I did college basketball with Sean Devaney. For years now, he's been the NBA guy for the Sporting News, and he's our guy tonight here on CBS Sports Radio. How you been, Shorty?
Pretty good, Jody Mack. How are you?
My pleasure. Thanks for coming on board. Before we start the overall seasonal preview, want to knock out a couple of newsy nuggets around the NBA. Pascal Siakam was one of the most improved players in the NBA last year. Huge part of the Raptors winning the championship. Understood that their since-departed superstar was the number one reason why they were able to walk away with the O'Brien Trophy. If that's the case, Siakam might have been reason number two. He got rewarded today with a four-year max deal at $129.9 million. A necessity or a smart move by the Raptors?
You know, a little of both. I mean, it's certainly a necessity. It was something that they kind of had to do. They knew that if Kawhi Leonard was going to leave, that this was going to be Siakam's team, and that they were going to have to commit to that, even though you just can't be quite sure whether he's going to be able to handle the load of being the number one option. You know, that's not something he's had to do before. So that's going to be, a difficult transition for him. And they obviously feel comfortable that that's going to work out all right. They're in a position where they had to do it, but there's no question it is a risky move.
A little risky, but I really do like Siakam, and I think he's going to take even a further step up this year without Kawhi Leonard. Some believe he could go back. I think he's going to show even better. Other max contract signed this week was Bradley Beal with the Wizards for just 2 years, which I understand it on both parts. The Wizards already have a less than palatable contract with John Wall on their books. Now they're giving max money to Beal. That's a whole lot of cash and eating up your cap for two guards. But I also understand it from Beal's point of view, because if he gets the 2 years in, then he's a 10-year player in the league. Then he can get that mega contract with 10 years under his belt. Does it work for both teams? Does it work more for one side or the other? What do you make of just the 2-year max for Beal?
Well, yeah, the Wizards did want to try to give him the 3-year deal. They made that offer to him 3 years, and I think it was $111 million. And he decided, well, I'm going to go with 2 years, and he can actually opt out if he wants. I think for Beal, he doesn't want to leave Washington. He wants to keep trying with the Wizards. But he also doesn't want to get in a situation where Wall comes back and he's not healthy and he's got $40 million a year sitting on the books. And they can't do anything. He doesn't want to be in that situation. So I think this was a way for him to sort of buy some time. You know, let me extend for 2 years so they don't have to worry about, you know, are they going to trade him? You don't have to answer those questions all through this season. See how Wall is when he does come back. See what happens with their draft picks. Hachimura, they really like. They might be a really bad team this year, so maybe they can get some luck in the lottery next year. You know, he kind of wants to see how things progress, if there's a direction there. If at the end of this year there isn't a direction, then I think he'll tell the team, hey, look, we need to work something out here. So I think that this was sort of taking his free agency situation and just bumping it back a year.
Fair enough. One more newsy note. And it has to do with real hard news, and that would be the relationship between the NBA and the country of China. This week, Adam Silver came out and said China requested that the NBA fire Daryl Morey. Not the Houston Rockets, the NBA. And the commissioner said not only will they not fire him, they're not even going to discipline him for his tweet about Hong Kong. And then the report today that the Chinese government said that Adam Silver will face retribution for defaming China in the latest twist of the dispute. Retribution. Give me your interpretation of the use of the word retribution. There's probably some lost in translation between English and Chinese or whatever else, but that kind of sounds like a scary word to me.
Yeah, it really does. And this has been such a mess. And this is just another layer to it. And it does seem like anytime somebody talks about it, it makes things worse. Whether you're Adam Silver and you're trying the NBA, you look at it. The NBA is in a lose-lose situation. If you do what Adam Silver did and try to say, you know, we stood up to the Chinese, we wouldn't fire Daryl Morey. Well, then you're ticking off the Chinese, and you know that's more money that you're losing, more revenue that you're losing. If you do what LeBron James did earlier in the week and say Daryl Morey shouldn't have sent that tweet and was sort of more pro-China on that, then everybody here in the U.S. says, oh, what is LeBron doing? And he lost a lot of face. So that's the situation the NBA is in right now. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. And we're seeing that play out. But as far as what the Chinese government is going to do, they do have complete control over how the NBA is presented in China and how much money the league can take out of that country. And that is a significant chunk of revenue for the league. And that's going to cost teams. It's going to cost players. This has really been a disaster.
It has. And you're right. I thought the NBA would kind of hope that it would just die down and people didn't continue to reference it. But to Adam Silver's credit, I'll at least give him credit for stepping up and saying, no, we're not going to be dictated to unemployment of important people in our league, even if it does end up costing them some significant money. All right, let's get to the action on the floor. Season gets underway on Tuesday night, and the first game doesn't have the most pronounced player that TNT was hoping for to open up the season with Zion Williamson starting with an injury issue. We all watched him blow out his sneaker on national TV last year, which was weird and almost cool, but not great for Duke. He plays in one summer league game in Vegas, and he ends up hurting himself and misses the rest of the summer league. And now he's hurt again before the season gets underway. Is that a worry for the Pelicans? Is Zion Williamson a potential always injured guy, or is it much too early to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course it's much too early, but I think if you're the Pelicans, you look at what the history of that organization has been, and injuries have ruled the day. I mean, since that team moved to New Orleans, injuries have really dominated. They've had so much trouble staying healthy. So this is a not again kind of situation. It's something that, especially when you get a knee involved, you start to wonder if there is maybe a meniscus problem, something that is just slightly amiss that is going to continue to cause this kind of injury. The good news is that we've come a long way with knees. I mean, I can remember, 10, 15 years ago, people thought that Dwayne Wade, who didn't have a meniscus at all, he had it removed in college, that he was going to have trouble once he hit 30. And, of course, he played to 37. So, of course you're worried about it, especially if you're the Pelicans, given their history. But I just think it's too early. We'll have to see, sort of how this develops.
Understood. And I hope that's the case, that this is not something that plagues him his entire career, because I think he's a special player and can be one of the best in the NBA for the next decade and change. Comparing the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference going into this 2019-20 season, if we can agree that the Western Conference on paper is the stronger of the two conferences, the difference between the two conferences marginal, pretty significant, or night and day?
It's night and day. It really is right now. You probably have five teams in the Western Conference that are legitimate championship caliber teams, you know, starting with the Clippers. You've got the Lakers, the Rockets, you know, Denver, of course, given what they did last year, bringing that team back. Utah made great improvements, you know, bringing in Mike Conley, bringing in Bogdanovich. You know, it really is. And then you even get down to the lower teams, you know, Dallas and you know, San Antonio. Sacramento should be better, you know, and these are the teams that are probably going to be 10, 11, 12, you know, and these are teams that would probably win 46, 47 games in the Eastern Conference and be short playoff teams. They're not going to be playoff teams in the West. You've got, you know, Philadelphia and Milwaukee, and then it's a pretty steep drop off. We'll see how Boston comes together with Kemba Walker as the point guard, whether they've gotten past some of the issues they had last year. We'll see how Toronto plays. I'm very, very curious as to whether losing Kawhi, how far that sets them back, and how much some of those young guys step forward. You mentioned Siakam. I also think Anunoby is going to be somebody to keep an eye on as well. They're really counting on him taking a huge stride this year. So, you know, there's definitely interesting teams in the East, but you look at the West, and like I say, you've got five potential champions there.
Well, one team you didn't mention in those five is the defending Western Conference champions, the Golden State Warriors, who've only gone to five straight NBA finals. Now, they lost a pretty good player by the name of Kevin Durant. I can't argue that with you, but they did keep Klay Thompson. He's going to come back with plenty of time to get into 100% shape before the playoffs start. They won't be a highly ranked playoff team. I'm with you. There are others that are better in the West, but come playoff time, they know how to get it done. Been there, done that. If I told you one of the two NBA Finals teams was going to make it back to the NBA Final, which one would you take, Golden State or Toronto?
Oh, I would definitely say Golden State. I don't think either one will. You know, I think the Warriors, as great as Steph Curry is, and I think we're going to see that MVP-level Steph Curry that we've seen in the last few years before they got Kevin Durant. I think we're going to see that version of him. And you know, we'll see how D'Angelo Russell fits in. You know, Klay Thompson will come back. He's not going to be the same, not until you give him a whole year. You just don't come back from an ACL, you know, no matter how much time you give it, you know, until the second year. It's got to be the second year. That's when you're 100%. He's just not going to be the same until then. Their bench is really an odd mix. We'll see how that comes together. Some young guys on there that they're going to be counting on. So, yeah, I think the Warriors are not going to drop off a cliff. I don't think the Raptors will either, but I'd be shocked if either one made it back to the finals.
All right. We've seen this now happen in other sports. I was part of it down in Philadelphia when the Sixers went full tank mode and began the process to try and rebuild their franchise. And it ended up with them getting some pretty good young players in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. We'll see if it pays off the ultimate prize of a championship. Is there a team in position to do that? If not at the start of the season, make the decision in season. All right, we're going for the first overall pick in the draft. We can't win this year. We'll move veteran players. We won't care how many games we win in the second half. Is there any tank potential in the NBA 2019-20?
I think Charlotte is probably the first team that comes to mind. You know, the position that they're in, you know, they've got these big contracts still on the books that they're waiting for them to come off, guys like Batum, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. You'll see them, you know, really trying to shop those guys, I think, as the season progresses and really get bad. I think that's how they're going to approach things. Cleveland is a potential team like that, you know, depending on their health situation, you know, what Kevin Love, you know, do they look to trade him? Do they look to trade some of the other veterans that they have, guys like Brandon Knight? Is a possibility. Yeah, so I think Cleveland is certainly in position to do that sort of thing. I think the Knicks ought to do it, but I don't think they will. You know, I think that you look at the guys they signed, and they sort of set themselves up to be a 29, 30, 31 win team for no particular reason. You know, where what you really need is somebody who is going to change the course of the franchise. So I don't know that RJ Barrett's good enough to do that. So, yeah, I mean, those are probably the prime contenders for that as far as I'm concerned. concerned, I think Charlotte's probably the most likely.
All right, that's the bottom. Now I'm going to take you back to the top for the last question. Since you said don't think either the Warriors or the Raptors are getting back to the NBA final, who is?
Oh, I think the Clippers are a pretty good bet. You know, I just, the depth that they have, and I know that they're not completely healthy right now, but I'm not even sure that that matters. The depth that they have, the defense that they're going to be able to play, the level of defense every night that they're going to be able to play, whether Kawhi is playing, whether Paul George is playing or not, because they were a very good defensive team without those guys last year. So, you know, I think that the level of defense that the Clippers are going to play is really going to set them apart. So I'd have the Clippers. And, you know, I just think that right now, I think Milwaukee's just the class of the Eastern Conference. I think that's the most likely team as they stand. We'll see if they can, you know, they got pretty lucky with health last year. Depth could be an issue for them. They didn't have any major injuries other than Malcolm Brogdon missed some time at the end of the year and into the playoffs. But not much. Everybody else was pretty much healthy. So if they can come back and stay healthy, then I think you've got to make the Bucks a favorite in the East.
Jordan, good stuff. Appreciate you coming on board. We'll tap into your insight plenty over the course of the season. Enjoy it, my friend.
All right, Jody, thank you.
That is Sean Devaney from the Sporting News NBA Insider.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.